Hello and welcome. Even though we are under the Two Generations Gaming umbrella, this is One Guy Reading. Whether you meant to or not, you've found Noob's Book Club. I'm Sean, Noob of All Trades from Two Generations Gaming, and in this series I am reading and reacting to Jurassic Park, the classic novel by Michael Crichton. I wanted to release this episode over the weekend, but as sometimes happens, the weekend got away from me, and I focused more on doing the review for Fallout Episode 2. So this episode, Episode 11, which starts Iteration 5, is coming out today. I should be able to release two more episodes this week, I'm hoping, and stay on track to finish this one so that I can start the Poppy War and then decide going forward if I'm going to do the second book in the Poppy War series or if I'm going to try to stretch that one out. Either way, I want to get to August when the next Dragonlance book comes out, Book 3. In that series, and I have some other books in the queue going forward. You can look in the show notes to see what the tentative schedule is. As I've been doing since I started a couple episodes ago, I will use Spark Notes for the summary. I will give my reaction to the section after. This is episode 11, the start of the fifth iteration. Flaws in the system will now become severe. Ian Malcolm. Search. While Dune and Gennaro go out to investigate the Hadrosaur stampede, Arnold informs them that he has found Nedry. Once they reach him, they retrieve the rocket launcher and leave Nedry's carcass to the compies, which Gennaro notices have five-fingered hands. Grant and the kids float under the giant dome of the park's aviary. Aviary. Arnold monitors the motion sensors, but is unable to locate either the T-Rex or Grant and the kids. Malcolm claims that a part of his theory, the quote-unquote Malcolm effect, indicates the catastrophic event will happen when it appears the system is working perfectly. Inside the aviary, Grant and the kids are looking for motion detectors and are attacked by fiercely territorial pterodactyls, large fish-eating pterodactyls. One of them tries to pick up Lex, but Grant fights it off. They escape back to the raft. Unsure of what to do, when they are confronted by a group of poisonous Dilophosaurs, technically venomous, by the shore, Grant and company are saved when the T-Rex appears and distracts the Dilophosaurs long enough to allow the raft to pass. Once again, thank you to Sparks Notes for that succinct summary. And now for my reaction. Dinosaurs attack! Remember a few episodes when we discussed the importance of the compies to the ecosystem of the park? How they discovered that the dinosaur poop didn't decompose because the bacteria that helped the decomposition process went extinct with them? And so, they use the compies as scavengers in that capacity? I have nothing to say about that. Just, the poop is funny, and it shows the complete lack of safeguards installed in the place. As usual, some good and some bad. The actual point here is that Crichton gives us gruesome proof of concept of the compies as scavengers. They quote-unquote attack Nedry's corpse, which is discovered by Muldoon and Gennaro. When the men approach, the compies scatter, but stay near and form a perimeter. After they leave, the compies come back to resume their feast. You can tell Crichton had fun with that scene. When Grant and the kids go to the aviary, Crichton takes another shot at their planning. They see that the aviary isn't complete. That's because the dinos that they built the thing for are highly territorial and attack nearly anything that moves and intrudes on that territory. Oops. I mean, at this point, it's so commonplace that it shouldn't even faze me. And yet, are you motherfucking kidding me with this shit? Just reminds me of when I worked at UPS and drew a conclusion, but that comes later. Initially, as they approach, they wonder why the area looks unfinished. They think of some theories. None of them considers the actual reason. As a result, when they make it into the aviary, the flying giant chicken lizards attack Grant and the kids. The attack takes them by surprise, but they recover quickly and escape mostly unscathed. The last falls into not really an attack, but Big Rex finds Grant and the kids. She also finds some other prey by the river. Deus Ex Machina! But I'll allow it, because I think the Big Rex might bring back body count next episode. Hey, a guy can hope. While Big Rex doesn't attack this time, it's not for lack of trying. She stalks the raft along the river. She then notices the Dilophosaurs on the shore and becomes agitated. She tries repeatedly to break through the trees. No attack this time, but the next chapter is named for her, so I do hold out hope. A word about the science. Again, the science in this section goes to show how under-researched, under-prepared, and half-baked this park was. It's a zoo. Let's add an aviary. We'll give visitors a chance to sit on their terrace and watch giant flying lizard chickens go by. Wait, what's this? The giant flying lizard chickens are highly territorial and aggressive? If only we took the time to research that possibility before actually building the thing. But hey, research is for nerds. And nerds don't get girls. You know what gets girls? Money. Money and power and fame. And this park will give me plenty of that. Look, I'd be willing to chalk it up to fiction, and it works that way because Crichton wrote it that way. But as I've said before, parenthetically, and we'll say again in a minute or two, and parenthetical, it hits too close to the truth to write it off as speculative or paranoid. Plus, it's expanded to other non-lethal endeavors. Remember when software companies used to beta test? I noticed the change, incrementally, parenthetically, boiling frogs and all that, and parenthetical, a while ago, allowing players quote-unquote early access to beta test. Then they just removed all pretense and released shit all buggy. Then they make you download gigabytes worth of crap, even though you just bought the game on disc. Seriously, screw you, and get off my lawn. So these mythical quote-unquote good billionaires and the quote-unquote invisible hand of the market, do they even exist? I know I sound biased to the negative when it comes to capitalism. Now I'm not going to suddenly reverse course here and trumpet the wonders of capitalism, no matter how fascist, parenthetically. Okay, that's not true. In parenthetical, we become, I will stick to my pinko ways. Okay, no, that's really not true. If the fascists really come calling, I will do what it takes to save myself and my family. Seriously, though, I always come out against unregulated capitalism. And that fits right in with this current rant. Safeguards, checks and balances, regulation. These are all needed, or you run into a quote-unquote let-them-eat-cake situation. We know how that eventually ends. I'm not advocating that course of action. I'm just saying. What I liked least. Yeah, I know I sound like a broken record, but it all just comes across as so blatantly obvious. Sure, Crichton writes it that way. If we're being honest, though, it isn't that far off from the truth, is it? I know I'm biased in that I admitted last episode to falling victim to the scourge of a lack of nuance, but I don't think I'm guilty here. I'll let you be the judge. I may have told this story before. I grew up in Pennsylvania, parenthetically Pittsburgh and Erie, in parenthetical, at a time when environmental regulation just began to get implemented. I heard stories of the Allegheny River catching on fire. More than once, they stopped us from swimming in Lake Erie because of pollution levels. In both cases, do you realize how much pollution it takes to pollute such a massive body of water? Me neither, but I imagine it's a lot. Hell, I just watched the OJ documentary. They talked about the smog level. Imagine that, rather than combat the pollution they came up with. A portmanteau to describe it. So don't tell me that these rich assholes give a single shit about us. They care only about money. They will burn down the entire planet, parenthetically, and others, to make an extra buck. And if they do burn it down, they think that their wealth will somehow save them. Well, guess what, Sparky? Only for so long. And please, for the love of God, don't give me that tired bullshit about the invisible hand of the market. Every economics lesson I've taught, listened to, or read implies that the theories only work if we assume that humans act rationally. Polluting necessary waterways? Giving pollution a cute name instead of coming up with ways to combat it? Continually trying to bring things to life, the cautious science fiction writers warned us about for centuries, launching you and your rich buddies into space to find more resources to exploit. Does any of this sound like the thoughts and actions of a rational human being? Maybe I'm missing something, but not to me. So we're cursed to sit idly by while the douchebags roll back sensible regulations and then fail to install the safeguards themselves. It's a maddening Groundhog Day because it is easily countered or avoided, and it most likely ends in all of our deaths. You may have heard me say it before, but I'm not a quote-unquote save-the-earth guy. The Earth will be fine without us. In fact, she may do better. What we need to do is ensure that the Earth remains sustainable for us. Sounds selfish? Yes, but ultimately true. Honestly, though, it's not more selfish than the man who sold the world. Plus, the kernel of truth and appeal to self-preservation might just be enough to get the starfuckers to stop starfucking. It's worth a shot, and not much else has worked on them. What I liked best. Okay, let's try to end this on a positive note. We always try to, but I think it's needed now more than ever. Honestly, not much to choose from the positives in this section. Luckily, the good that shines through really shines. So it's not as much of a default selection as you might assume based on this intro. I seem to be having trouble both finding joy and expressing that joy today. Let me try to reset and try again. What I meant to say after that intro is that I really like Grant's character in this section. In the movie, he doesn't like kids. I don't know why they emphasize that. Are they trying to give him a redemption arc when he's forced to protect them? All it does is make him less likable. It's also a complete 180 from the book. I guess Crichton helped write the screenplay for the first movie, so it feels like a weird decision and change. Then again, this isn't the time to litigate all that. See, I'm just having difficulty. Even though he loves kids in the book, it takes nothing from his act of helping them. He's no better in the movie because he helped them there. Any person would help kids, unless they are total scum. And it doesn't matter if your kids are not. Humans survive through our communal nature. Grant realizes that where others fail to. Like I say, it actually makes me like him better. He doesn't need some Hollywood BS convoluted reason to want to protect and, eventually, find out that he tolerates them. Plus, he helps them by using his knowledge of the dinosaurs to keep them safe. This time, though, he just fights the dinosaur off to save Lex from being carried away. Then, when they keep on down the river, he keeps an eye on Big Rex and the Dilos, ready and able to jump to quick action should the need arise. He just overall stepped up in a big way in this section, and his protection feels much more natural, not forced into hanging out with the kids, doesn't have to have some epiphany to turn things around. It just worked better for me overall. And now for my final thoughts. On the surface, not much happened in this section. They find Nedry's body. Grant and the kids get attacked by Dactyls, then stalked by Big Rex again. That's it. When I said that the liked best came more or less as a default, I meant it. Not much to really like here, and yet I still enjoy this section very much. Not as much as some of the other recent sections, but good enough. Even at his most mediocre, Crichton still blows it out of the water. I know great things are to come. I can be patient through a lull in the action, as long as it all pays off in the end, and I know it will. As always, thanks for listening. You can find us if you haven't already at www.twoguysgaming.net. We have articles. I just wrote the review for Fallout Episode 2. I mentioned that in the intro. And I'm going to do Mario in May coming up. Not sure what I'm going to do tomorrow, but I have a plan for Thursday, so I'll throw something together for tomorrow. And then I'd like to add some Mario content to the YouTube as well. Speaking of the YouTube, you can find us on YouTube, Two Generations Gaming. Our Instagram is hit or miss, a lot more miss than hit recently, but at least I got it up and running again, and I can work to make it more hit than miss, and hopefully try to pull in some fans that way. I will try to be back with this series on Wednesday or Thursday, and then again on Saturday or Sunday to try to get back on schedule. I will talk to you then. Bye, guys.